Okay, so let's discuss then. What is a guru? So, start with this group over here. David's group. Somebody? Just one point.
makes Krishna consciousness practical for us by giving us actual services to focus on.
Okay, gives practical service. Very nice. This group?
This is the representative of Krishna.
Representative of Krishna. They couldn't see the screen. Representative of Lord. Okay. Nan's group.
Our connection to Krishna.
Connects us to Krishna. Okay. Next group.
He teaches by example.
Are you not part of the names group?
No.
Okay. Teaches by example. What does he teach?
Devotional service.
Okay. Teaches devotional service by example. Good.
From a disciplic succession.
Very good. Let's say a disciple himself in bona fide disciplic succession. Very good. Okay, I'll open up to the floor now. Anybody?
He teaches us the conclusion of the scriptures as he has learned from his predecessors.
Give a round of applause. Have you got internet access there? You could give a round of applause to the internet access. what was that? I know that was a direct quote.
He teaches us the conclusion of all the scriptures.
So teaches by example and teaches conclusion of scriptures as Mataji said. Teaches conclusion of scriptures. Okay. Anybody else?
Someone who has seen the truth.
What does that mean, someone who has seen the truth? What does that mean, someone who has seen the truth?
Study the scriptures and realize the scriptures.
Yeah. Someone who's realized the scriptures. So it's one thing, you see there's something called Gyan and there's something called Vigyan. So here, okay, let me ask it a different way. Does everybody here agree that we are spirit soul?
Yeah.
Yes? Who's realized that? Ian,
yeah.
You've realized that? Wow. So we may have gyan of it, but we may not be at the level of vigyan. Right? But guru is at the level of vigyan. It's actually realized that. Yes. Well, anything else?
He's the way back to Godhead.
What does that mean?
He takes us
back to Godhead.
Well, he's called his mercy, he takes us back.
Like a captain of the boat, you know, he crosses the ocean of the material ignorance.
He's a path.
Okay, very good. Captain of the ship.
He dispels the darkness.
That's a very flowery way of saying, he gives us. He's that's the key thing. He gives us knowledge. So does he teach us 1 + 1 = 2?
Spiritual
knowledge. Okay, give the other groups a chance. I know you've got all the answers here. He's a pure devotee. Very good. He's very, I'm going to say he's very dear to Krishna. Yep.
He works as a role model to his disciples.
Yes. So I'm going to put that under this one here. Teaches us by example. Yes, role model. Mataji?
Yeah, teaches the scriptures as it is without interpretation.
As it is, yes, okay. Very good.
He's transcendentally fixed in his position.
He's transcendentally fixed in his position. Can you say that in English? What does that mean?
It means that
he himself is practicing? Preaches by example? What does that mean?
No.
He's perfect.
It means he doesn't get deviated from his level.
He doesn't deviate.
What does deviate mean?
So let's say all. Yeah, that's to do with the being a pure devotee. Let's say doesn't fall down.
Yeah.
Doesn't deviate. I like the word deviate. Doesn't deviate from KC. Okay, very good. He's, yes, very merciful. In what way does it become a guru? True, you're right. But what actually makes him a guru? Somebody may be merciful, but that doesn't necessarily make them a guru. So there's a secondary aspect to that. He's merciful, therefore what does he do?
Goes out.
Yes, he's merciful, therefore he preaches. You carry on. Outside, please.
5 o'clock.
When we finish at 5 o'clock, you can start.
Fiction.
Okay, we'll come to that later. So, just generally, what's the principle of guru for now? Yes.
He's a respectful source of discipline. So, respect him.
He's a respectable source of discipline.
Yes. As in, he's like anyone could be guru, but any guru is one you get take discipline from.
Okay.
And you do that when you get
so prepared. Yeah, we can say he teaches his disciples, teaches others.
Discipline.
Teaches and disciplines others.
Yes.
Okay. Okay. That's a pretty comprehensive list. I think we kind of understand now what is a guru. Yes? Okay, give yourselves a round of applause. Very nice discussion. Okay, if everybody could just come back. You can stay roughly where you are. Just get comfortable kind of where you are, if that's okay. And please remember which group you're in, because you're going to need it later. Yeah, if you want to come and fill up the space there, come closer. Come closer if there is space. Okay, this next bit now is going to be quite intense. I'm going to ask you, Pritam, please don't chant. Please don't chant while somebody's talking. I'll talk about this in the afternoon. Yes, if anybody, I would like to request, nobody should be chanting we're going to talk about inattentive chanting later, and this is one of them. You can't concentrate on a class and chant at the same time. It's impossible, unless you are some super duper human being with two brains. It's hard enough doing it with one mind. What to speak of two minds? What did I switch it off. Okay. So what is a guru? Guru is a representative of Krishna. I'm just going to go through the main point. You came up with a very comprehensive list there, but I just want to focus on some key aspects of that list. A guru is a representative of Krishna, like the ambassador or a policeman. So Srila Prabhupada, he says, when a policeman comes to your home, it's not that he is the government, but he represents the government. So how do we treat him?
As
a
government.
Yeah, we respect as much as we would the government. Give that policeman would give him as much respect as if the government themselves were there. Or an ambassador. When the ambassador of the United States of America comes to the UK, right? The red carpet comes out, everything, we treat that ambassador just as if, because he's going to then go back and tell the President of the United States, oh my God, they're treating me like dirt. Right? That's not going to look very good. So for us, we see Guru, we treat Guru as if he is God. As a disciple, we treat our Guru as if this was God himself here. Not that he is God, he's a representative of God. There was one time a reporter was interviewing Srila Prabhupada and she noticed that he came in a big car. I think I have the quote here. She noticed that he came in a big car. So then she was commenting on it. Sorry, give me 1 second. I'll just read you the quote. Miss Nixon, you have said that you are not God, and yet it appears to me as an outsider that your devotees treat you as if you were God, Srila Prabhupada. Yes, that is their duty. Because a spiritual master is executing God's order, he should be respected as much as God, just as a government officer should be respected as much as the government. Miss Nixon, I also wonder about the many beautiful material things that the devotees bring you. For instance, you left the airport in a beautiful fancy car. I wonder about this because, and Prabhupada cuts her off, that teaches the disciples how to regard the spiritual master as good as God. If you respect the government representative as much as you respect the government, then you must treat him opulently. If you respect the spiritual master as much as God, then you must offer him the same facilities you would offer to God. God travels in a golden car. If the disciples offer the spiritual master an ordinary tin motor car, it would not be sufficient because the spiritual master has to be treated like God. If God comes to your house, will you bring him an ordinary tin motor car? Or will you arrange for a golden car? Dad, have we got a golden car arranged for Guru Maharaj? Do you see the point? Spray paint it. The point is, the principle is the key thing to take away from that. The principle, the mood. The mood is that when we see spiritual master, we treat as if God. We serve in that mood, giving everything. Because the guru is the external manifestation of super soul. Now, I'll explain this in more detail in a little while. Right? There's the first guru is actually Chaita Guru, super soul in the heart. But we can't always hear that guru, so therefore the Chaita Guru manifests externally as our spiritual master. So this person we can hear. Vinod, stop it! Right? Super Soul may tell you that, but you'll do it anyway. Super Soul says, Vinod, don't do it. oh, what the hell? We do it anyway. And specifically, the guru is somebody who awakens devotion to Krishna. That's why when we, before any class, what is the first prayer that we chant is? Om Gyana Timirandasya. That the spiritual master, he opens my darkened eyes with the torchlight of knowledge. We were born in the darkest darkness of ignorance. And the spiritual master with the torchlight of knowledge, he opens our eyes. So somebody who does that, somebody who is giving us spiritual knowledge, he is considered to be, he or she is considered to be a guru. Right? Opening our eyes. So now we come to the next part, and then we're going to talk about how we find a guru. So just before we talk about how we find a guru, I just want to talk, say a little bit, what is initiation? This is your question, right? So this is a quote, I forgot to write the quote. It's a Srila Prabhupada quote. Diksha actually means initiating a disciple with transcendental knowledge by which he becomes freed from all material contamination. So, initiation, if you examine that word, initiation, what does it actually mean? This is where you start. This is where your spiritual life starts. Say again? Second birth, yeah, your spiritual birth. Initiation means that's where your spiritual life actually starts. And what does it mean by starting? What actually starts is the flow of transcendental knowledge by which you can become freed from all material contamination. So that process begins. I wanted to tell you a little story of my own personal experience just to give you some inspiration. Many years back, we had a sangha here in the temple, and I remember my mum was sitting in the corner, and we were having a discussion, and her and my dad had already taken initiation. And she was saying in that discussion that before initiation, she was feeling, she was just going on with her spiritual life. But she said after initiation, it felt like her spiritual life went like a rocket. It was much easier after initiation. Right? And you'll see why in a second. So when I heard that, that was the seed implanted in me that was like, you know what, I want to take initiation. I also want to experience that rocket. Right, going to Krishna. I may as well tell you this just to set your expectations. By the way, that rocket feeling doesn't last. But the good news is, one devotee gives a nice example. He says that initiation is like the plane taking off, right? So you get that, you know, you get that feeling. But then, once you're up in the sky, it's not that exciting, right? But how fast are you moving? How fast are you moving? So it doesn't feel like you're taking off. It doesn't feel like you're doing anything. Up in the plane, but actually you're moving 600 miles an hour. Right? Moving much faster than you would be if you hadn't taken initiation. See? So yeah. Enjoy the rocket experience while it lasts. What is initiation? So this is from Nectar of Devotion, page XX. This is the preface. Yeah, preface. The connection with Krishna is officially established. From the date of initiation, the connection between Krishna and a person cultivating Krishna consciousness is established. Here is a very hard-hitting statement. Without initiation by a bona fide spiritual master, the actual connection with Krishna consciousness is never performed. In other words, if you don't take initiation, the actual connection, everything that you're doing, connection with Krishna is not made. Heavy, huh? I remember we have a Sangha group and Nishi was in that group, right? You remember? And we had a 2-hour discussion on just on this point. Like, oh my God, what? Does that mean everything we do before initiation is useless? Is a big fat zero? Oh, throw your beads away, right? What am I doing then? Does it mean it's useless? What was the conclusion of that discussion, Nishi?
We were saying that everything you do before initiation is like stacking up zeros. But then when you take initiation, your guru puts a one in front of all those zeros, so it becomes like millions and millions.
Wow. Give a round of applause. I like that. So all the devotional service that we're doing is just waiting for that point when you take initiation and all of it suddenly. It's like there's some credit waiting to go into your bank account. Right? There's some spiritual credit waiting to go, but it's not in your bank account just yet. All you need is an activation code. And your guru will give you that at the time of initiation. And all of a sudden, you'll see your bank account going. Right? So it's just waiting for that point. So don't be at a loss. Don't think, oh my God, you know, I'm not initiated. What does that mean? Everything I'm doing is useless. No. And anyway, it is preparation for initiation. If you can't chant 16 rounds on a daily basis before initiation, you're not going to do it afterwards. Right? So anyway, you have to prepare yourself for the time where you do get initiation. So you should do it anyway. Is that okay? I actually didn't know I didn't know this until only recently. But because of good association and inspiration from my parents and things, I took initiation anyway. But if I'd known that before, I would have been like, oh my God. And so I understand if you feel like that. But it's just there to inspire you. Right, to give you more incentive to actually take initiation, right, to do it in the first place. And at the time of initiation, the guru gives you the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. He gives you a new name to establish your relationship with Krishna as a servant. So sometimes you might have a disciple, there might be a disciple with a big long name like Adorya, Gaura, Chandra, blah-de-blah-de-blah, right? But the most important part of the name is Das. Right? Most important part of the name is Das. We always refer to ourselves as Das, and we refer to everyone else as Prabhu. It was funny, one time I heard somebody introducing himself as I am so-and-so Prabhu. I looked at the person and I said, we were laughing. I was like, no. When you introduce yourself, you always say Das. When you're introducing others, then you say Prabhu. Everybody else is master, and we are servant. We are the servant. Das means servant, yes. And for Mataji, it's Dasi or Devi Dasi. That's the most important part of your name. I think a lecture by His Holiness Radhanath Maharaj, he said this point, and it really hit me. I was like, yeah, that's true.
For other Matajis, you address them as Mataji.
You can address them as...
You address as Dasi.
Yes. Yes. We always say, I'm servant, and everybody else is senior. And at the time of initiation... Oh, actually, let me just mention something about the Hare Krishna Mantra. Normally, a mantra only works if it's given by initiation, if it's given by a guru to a disciple. So, you know, there's many people who chant, for example, the Gayatri Mantra. Right? If it's not actually given by guru, the full effect is not there, says in Hari Bhakti Vilas, one of our scriptures. So it has to be given by initiation. However, the Hare Krishna Mantra is most merciful. That's why it's the Maha Mantra. It still works even without initiation. Oh, thank God. All these years. Right? It still works even without initiation. But Srila Prabhupada says that at the time of initiation, the guru renders the Maha Mantra more powerful. Right? The guru renders the mantra more powerful. You get, in other words, there's more mercy. There's more
mercy.
Very important you understand this point. by Guru's mercy, the same chanting of the Hare Krishna mantra takes you further. It takes you further, closer to Krishna. So that's why it's important. And at second initiation, Prabhu wants to know, second initiation you get the Gayatri mantras. Right? 7 sets of Gayatri mantras. And these are very private, confidential mantras given by the Guru. At the time of initiation, the Guru consumes all the sinful reaction of his disciples. Okay, I'm going to ask you a question. Would anyone here be willing to accept somebody else's all their sinful reaction, all their heavy bad karma, you know, breaking a leg and heart attacks and whatever sinful reaction is coming to them? Would anybody here be willing to accept for someone else's spiritual advancement? Would anybody here like to accept somebody else's bad karma? Oh my God, we have enough of our own to deal with, right? We have so much of our own to deal with. This is what Guru does for us. I want you to think about that very, very, very carefully. The seriousness of that. That is what the Guru is willing to do for you. He's willing to take all the reactions of millions and millions and millions and trillions of lives on himself, just so that you can advance to Krishna. Srila Gurudev ki
jai.
That is most merciful. That Guru is so merciful.
What if you have the mood of not wanting to give all that karma to your Guru because that's not very, I feel like that's very selfish rather than selfless. I don't want to give all my rubbish to a Guru only to drag them down for me to perhaps ever attain, you know, Godhead. So how does that, to me logically, it doesn't fit in.
The important thing is that after initiation, you don't give him any more.
Of course.
That's more important.
Yeah.
At the time of initiation, the Guru wouldn't give you initiation if he wasn't able to take it. And Krishna will tell him himself. Krishna will give the Guru guidance himself. So the Guru is so powerful, he's like a transparent medium. It's like glasses, right? If you have a clear glass. So all the dirt goes straight through. Right? As pure as he is, if that Guru is totally pure, and he doesn't actually take that dirt himself, it goes through and Krishna takes it. Because he's very powerful. That's how powerful the Guru is. He's able to burn up your sinful reactions.
But you see so many cases like Jai Pratak Maharaj, His Holiness Shiva Maharaj, where they're suffering because of obviously disciples that aren't doing as they should be doing once initiated. So I don't want to contribute to that if I ever do get initiated, you know?
So that's what I'm saying. Don't do it afterwards.
Yeah, of course.
Srila Prabhupada also said the same thing. There was one time he put his hand up and his hand was all emaciated, like the skin was pulled across his bones, like really horrible. And he said, "This is the result of unqualified disciples." But he said, "I did it just to spread the Krishna consciousness movement." That is the mercy of a pure devotee. That they will still do it just to save you. That's how kind they are, how compassionate they are. Srila Prabhupada, he initiated tens of thousands of devotees. And many of them were unqualified. Now it's become a lot more strict. He said he did it. And he said that the gurus in the line of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, they will initiate. They'll do it just to spread the mission of Krishna consciousness, just to give plant the seed in everyone's heart. That's how merciful they are. It's the mood of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. We're very lucky to be here. Very lucky to be in the line of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Otherwise, the scriptures actually say, don't take disciples, don't take many disciples. Scriptures say that. But in the line of Lord Chaitanya, we ignore that. Scriptures say, don't cross over the oceans. Right? But how are you going to preach to other countries? So we ignore that instruction. Srila Prabhupada traveled the globe 14 times. Oops. right? Why did he do that? Because it's the mission of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. We are a preaching movement. Our mood is to take as many people, we're going back to Godhead, and our mood is to take as many people with us. Right? So they're willing to do that. Nishi?
I was just going to ask, you know, like in a husband-wife relationship, you share bad karma and you share good karma as well. So with the guru-disciple relationship, do you share good karma as well as bad? Like if you do something good spiritually, chanting rounds every day and worship.
That's not good karma, that's spiritual credits, yes, the guru automatically gets. Regards good karma, I haven't read anything that I don't know if anybody...
Still material. Good karma, yes. Bad karma, still on the material level.
Yes, still on the material level.
Once you get initiated, then it becomes akarma.
Not necessarily. I put anything in notes on this. If you still do good activities, but you're not in the right consciousness, it can still be material. See, at the time of initiation, the guru takes all your past karma, so now you have a spiritual body. But if I don't follow properly, then I can contaminate that spiritual body with even good karma. If then I stop chanting and I just involve myself in hospital work and charity work or something else, that's okay, it's good karma, but it's still material. So I'm contaminated my pure spiritual body. And obviously, in the other extreme is the sinful activities, then I will also get reaction. And what happens is the guru gets token reactions for this. I don't know specifically about good, but I definitely know about bad. That when the disciple doesn't follow properly after initiation, the guru and the disciple both get what's called token reactions. So it's not necessarily in their full. So here's a quote from Srimad Bhagavatam 4:21-31. The representative of Krishna takes all the resultant actions of the sinful life of the disciple immediately after the disciple's initiation. Thus, if the disciple follows the principles instructed by the guru, he remains purified and is not contaminated by the material infection. Again, this is encouraging you to take initiation. The guru takes all your bad karma. It takes all your karma, not just bad, but takes your reactions, which then allows you to practice your spiritual life nicely. This is the reason why my mum was saying that after initiation it felt like she was going like a rocket. Because what did she now not have? It's like, imagine you're on a journey and you're carrying this massive, massive burden, this weight on your back, right? How fast can you walk? Very difficult. Then all of a sudden somebody, the guru comes along and says, hey, let me take that for you. Then what happens? Right? Then you can run. You can run in your race back to Krishna. So that's what the guru is willing to do for you.
So probably the seventh offense of the holy name is to protect the guru, which is, you know, should not commit sinful activities in the name of the holy name.
Yes. Well, that you're talking about not even the seventh offense, just not committing sinful activities in the first place. The seventh offense is more subtle than that. It's more subtle. The seventh offense to the holy name is when somebody does sinful activities deliberately and thinking, oh, let me just chant and then that'll free me from the activity. That's something different. Something different. That's a bit more subtle than that. Sometimes the guru has to see bad dreams. And that's an indication to the guru that his disciples are not following properly, sometimes like that. So, this is what the guru is willing to do for you. It is a very grave responsibility of the disciple to follow strictly. And we'll see a bit later on that actually the relationship with the guru and disciple should be so strong that even if you don't feel like chanting, you will do your 16 rounds anyway. Out of love for your spiritual master. You'll do it for him. Even if you don't want to do it, you'll still do it. Even if you don't want to follow the four regs, you go to a restaurant and there's some onion. Oh, it's okay, just this once. Right? No. Do you want to give your spiritual master the reaction? Very serious. So it's a grave responsibility on the disciple. It's something that you should all consider before. And you are already considering. So in return for that, in return for the guru taking all your karma, right, and him taking responsibility of you to take you back to Godhead, in return for that, you have to vow that you will follow the four regulative principles. We'll talk about that in the afternoon. Chant 16 rounds of Hare Krishna Maha Mantra daily. Sorry, that should be chant minimum 16 rounds of Hare Krishna Maha Mantra daily. And you make these vows in front of four witnesses. The guru. Who else? I haven't written it there.
Deity.
The Vaishnavas. And the fire. Front of those. There's four witnesses that you've made that vow. Yes, and guru-disciple relationship must be so strong that a disciple will follow for the rest of his or her life. So take this very, very, very seriously. There's no turning back. Right? Some of you may have seen the film The Matrix. Right? You've got the red pill and the blue pill. Right? This is the red pill. Or the blue pill, I don't remember which one it is. Right? Once you take it, there's no turning back. Okay, so think about it very seriously.